When I, well, first of all, it's a relief to be here this afternoon preaching on, well, not dying. So this morning, that's what I was preaching on, death and dying, and how as Christians we die well, and how as Christians we can grieve well. So I was expecting to preach that again this afternoon and was relieved to realize it's the celebration of 2 years of Bixley Farm. Hey! Yeah! So I was like, right. I don't have to preach about death again. That's a relief. Okay. Do you know, when I 6 years ago, almost now to the day, I was licensed to be the minister at St. John the Baptist, as it was in those days, just St. John the Baptist. There was a very an acknowledgement that St. Andrew's, I would be licensed to St. Andrew's as well. But that would be in about 6 years, I was told, which would be about now. So it's kind of weird to think about how things have worked out in God's wisdom and God's timing. And I was only scheduled to be licensed to become the minister at St. Andrew's this summer. It obviously didn't work out that way for a whole variety of reasons. And I was actually licensed about a year later to St. Andrew's, and was vicar then at St. John's and at St. Andrew's. And, you know, there's a lot of ways in which St. John's and St. Andrew's were very, very similar. There were a lot of ways in which they were quite different as churches as well, in terms of history, in terms of a little bit around how their worship was working out and how they saw themselves. And so the thing I did, I thought, oh, this will be good. We'll do a series just asking the question, what does it mean to be church? Because then, in a sense, we're coming from slightly different places, but we share a common commitment to the Scriptures as the Word of God. And so let's start there and ask, what does the Bible say a Spirit-filled, dare I say, Pentecostal church look like? And we did a series that lasted for the best part of a term in the book of Acts, starting with the passage that Linda's just read for us, starting right there. And the first sermon was on the word devoted. I remember that so clearly. And we went through asking, what does a church into which the Spirit of God has been poured, what does that church look like? What priorities do they set themselves? You know, how do they shape worship? What are the key things? And that started a conversation in September 2015, started that series. And that started a conversation that went on with PCCs and so forth that came to fruition in June the following year. We had a weekend at home together. Partly it was based at St. John's School. The Friday night we did at St. Andrew's. The Sunday morning we did at St. John's. The Saturday we spent at the school. And we kind of brought that conversation to a conclusion, saying that, you know, taking this series that we had spent time exploring together, what the Scriptures teach about what a church should look like, that actually we felt that out of all of that, the things that we wanted to focus on, there were going to be five priorities that we set to shape our life going forward. As at that time, since St. Andrew's and St. John the Baptist Church. Just to give you a heads up, we've got another weekend coming up in June 2020. And given what happened off the back of the last one, I'm just a little bit anxious what the next 4 or 5 years are going to look like. But the five priorities were going to be a church that recognized our place, not just in terms of what God was doing in Ipswich, but in terms of what God was doing throughout the nations of the world. We were going to be a global church, and we were going to support mission, and we were going to support Christians where they were persecuted and where they were suffering. And that's where our partnership with Open Doors and things like that came out of, the commitment to be a global church. We were going to be a teaching church. I wish we'd use the word discipleship now, to be honest. I think that would have captured better what we were thinking of, but wanting to be a church that really worked hard at studying God's word and what God has revealed of who he is and of what he calls us to be. So we wanted to be a church that worked hard at understanding the Bible. We wanted to be a church, we decided very early on, we wanted to be a church that was united, which, you know, given where we were coming from, was really important. And that was where the journey to becoming a single parish really started. But the two things, that the last two priorities, are the ones that really fed into us being here this afternoon. One was we wanted to be a planting church. As we studied through the book of Acts, what we saw was that a spirit-filled, living church is a replicating church. You know, the churches, you know, every church that there is a letter written to in the New Testament was a church that was planted. Every church that we read about in the book of Acts was a church that was planted. It started at a particular point in time. And we just saw that that's what happens over and over again. The church replicates and grows and develops. And then those churches replicate and grow and develop. And so planting churches seemed to be something that when you looked at what the Bible has to say about churches, that's part of the equation. That's just the way it is. And that's what we want it to be. And we want it to be a growing church, by which we meant we wanted to be a church that was committed to evangelism. And I remember we just had a very simple diagram up on the screen where we sort of saw how for many churches, I had a church that was just represented by a circle. And most churches, the way we think about ourselves is, you know, here's the life of the church in this circle here, and then there's a smaller circle out here, just outside the life of the church, where the evangelism happens. And it's not really, it doesn't really affect the main life of the church. The main life of the church carries on. Most people manage to go to church without ever having to, you know, do any evangelism, even by accident. They can just carry on doing it. And there's a few people who always, in every church, there's always a few people who bang the drum for mission and bang the drum for evangelism. But they tend to be marginalized. They tend to be sidelined. They tend to be, and I just put up the next slide, and that slide then took that circle from the outside and put it right in the middle of the church, the life of the church, and said, no, we are going to be a church that is committed at every level of our being to growing and to proclaiming the gospel and to being evangelistic. And it is something that is going to affect all of us, and it is something that's not going to be seen as an optional extra for people who are into that sort of thing. This is what we are. This is one of our priorities going forward. And hopefully, as you hear that, you can begin to see why some of the things that we do across MIE are the things that we do. But it was those last two things that really fed into us being here today. The vision was for evangelism, really. You know, the Church of England has this thing called a parish system. The entire country is divided up into these sorts of areas. And each area has a church. And that church is kind of responsible for the evangelism of that area, that parish. And when we put the parishes of St. John's and St. Andrew's together, both St. John's and St. Andrew's churches were over to the west. They were over to the west of the parish, and there was this big, long bit of St. Andrew's parish that kicked way out into Bixley Farm, and there was no church there. And we went and we talked to a number of churches who over the years have done evangelism or have had home groups that have met in Bixley Farm or have tried to do stuff in Bixley Farm. We talked to a number of the churches around Bixley Farm and said, are you planning to plant a church there? What are you thinking of doing in the future? And everywhere we went, we heard the same story, that everybody had a sense that there should be a church here, but nobody was doing it. And there had been some attempts over the years, but they'd never quite got traction. They'd never really taken roots. And so the question I put out at that weekend was whether we should plant a church here, a church that would take evangelistic responsibility for the community of Bixley Farm. That was the question. And I remember saying, if we decide not to plant the church here, then my next question will be, what are we going to do to make sure that the people who live in Bixley Farm hear about Jesus? See, that is the reason we are here. We are here as an expression of the Church of Jesus Christ to take evangelistic responsibility for this community. Whose responsibility is it that the people at Bixley Farm hear about Jesus? It's ours. It's ours. That's why we're here. That's why we're here. And we spent that summer back in 2016 fasting and praying and people wrestling out whether God was calling them to be at St. John's, whether God was calling them to be at St. Andrew's, or whether God was calling them to be part of a new congregation that would be started here. And then in the September, we had an evening, and I didn't know the churches very well back then. I'd only been here a year and a half. I didn't even know most people's names by that stage. And we set a date and said, if you think God is calling you to be a part of this, be at St. Andrew's on this night. And I went there and I had absolutely no idea if anyone was going to turn up. But we did. And that night, we started praying together, worshiping together, studying the scriptures together, sharing hopes and dreams and visions for what we believe God was calling us to do. And it was the following September, 2 years ago, this weekend, that we opened the door. And the thing that brought us here, and the thing that united us, was our desire to make Christ known at Bixley. If we lose this, we lose our only reason for being here. This must stay our priority. And it has been. You know, we've been here 2 years. We've so much to celebrate. We've already been sharing stories all afternoon, praying together, rejoicing, celebrating in what God has done in us and through us. And to be here 2 years is a fantastic thing. But let me tell you this, and I don't want to put a dampener on the celebrations, but let me be honest with you. We are entering the most dangerous season in the life of a church plant. Okay? 40% of church plants that fail and close down between their third and fifth year. All right? It's the single most common period for church plants to stumble and fall and close. And when they look into this and do the research on it, there's a number of common reasons. One is leadership burnout. Just thought I'd put that out there, okay? Just so you know. All right, you know, 3 years in, people just burn out. Because we'll come to this in a minute, it's just hard work. Second is finance. A lot of church plants, when they start out, they have commitment for 3 years of financial backing from the church that sent them. And often that 3 years turns out not to be long enough for a congregation to become financially self-sustaining. And so when the money dries up, eventually the church plant falls. So those are the first two things. The third reason is that people move away for just completely legitimate reasons. Life takes them somewhere else. They move on, and the plant, the congregation, the size of it shrinks below critical mass. I don't think those three things are things we particularly need to worry about. My wife might disagree on the burnout front, but talk to her about that afterwards if you want. But I don't think MIE is going to pull the plug financially. I noticed, Elizabeth, I'll just flag that up with the wardens in the room. I doubt very much that MIE would pull the plug financially. And I think, you know, as a congregation, we're growing. So if you want to move away, off you go. Fine, we can do without you. You're not indispensable, all right? Seriously. The two other reasons that I do wonder if we need to pay a little bit more attention to. And one is to do with just the realization that actually planting a church is really hard work. It's a bit like watching people fall in love. You know when a relationship kicks off and it's just, I mean, it's a bit sickening for everybody else, isn't it? But it's all the romance and, you know, the gushiness and, you know, it's like, oh, this person can do no wrong and they're everything I ever wanted in a husband or a wife. And it's just like completely, completely naive and blind to the obvious difficulties that everybody else can see are going to be coming down the road on this. And I think there's something about that when we start a church plant. There's something of the same romance of being involved in something like starting a new church. But then about 2 years in, the romance fades. The momentum fades. 2 years, we're no longer the center of attention. 2 years ago, everybody wanted to know how the church plant at Bixley Farm is doing. People I'd never met before were coming up and saying, Mark, how's the church plant at Bixley Farm? I was getting invited to go and train clergy and to give talks and on church planting and stuff. You know, everybody wanted. Bixley Farm was the big news. Everyone wanted to come and be a part of MIE. Around the time that we planted Bixley Farm, our average Sunday attendance was over 400 people. Okay? Now, we're not the new big thing happening on the Christian scene in Ipswich anymore. There are other really cool things that are happening. And with the best will in the world, things at St. John's and at St. Andrew's have moved on. I mean, they're still vaguely aware that we're here. But we're not the center of their attention the way we were a couple of years ago. And all the initial excitement has dissipated a bit. And you know what? We've suddenly begun to realize that Bixley Farm has an awful lot of the same problems that an awful lot of other churches have. And a lot of the same issues and difficulties and tensions and struggles. There's a certain arrogance and naivety that I think is almost inevitable around starting up something like this. Inevitable but dangerous. I suspect a lot of that has been punctured now. Maybe we thought we'd grow massively. You know, there are stories, aren't there, about people who started church plants and they grew to 500 or 600 people within a couple of years. You can buy books on it and listen to the stories on YouTube and stuff. But that's not obviously not happening here. And the temptation is to become disillusioned and disenchanted and discouraged and frustrated. And actually, it's just really hard work. It's just hard work. Being here Sunday after Sunday. And it would just be an awful lot easier to go somewhere else. Somewhere that was more established. Somewhere where you could just turn up and the seats are already out and they don't have to be put away at the end. And there isn't the sense of fragility. And the question begins to surface, actually, why stay here? Why stay involved at Bixley Farm? And a lot of church plants fail because there isn't a clear answer to that question. Why stay here when it's actually an awful lot easier to go to church somewhere else? Where it can be an awful lot more exciting to go to church somewhere else. Why stay here? And the only answer is because the people of Bixley Farm need to hear about Jesus. And the church meeting in their community, worshiping in their community, taking evangelistic responsibility for their community, that's the best chance they've got. If we don't make it, here's the question. If we don't make it, if, as a church, we don't manage to keep the doors open week by week and the church plant closes, will we still be committed to the gospel being known on Bixley Farm? The fifth reason, and this is the most subtle and it's the most dangerous, and it's to do with the psychology of a church. When the plant stops thinking about itself as a new thing and starts to become established. And then we start to think like an established church. And the temptation is to turn inwards and to do that thing that churches do, where here's the main life of the church, and evangelism is now just the focus of a special interest group that happens outside the main life of the church. And the temptation is for us to spend our time and our energy worrying about how we are working. How is the life of the church? And we lose sight of evangelism as being our reason for being here. We lose sight of evangelism as being the common thing that binds us together, because it just takes so much energy to keep the church going. And any church that loses its focus on evangelism, that loses its commitment to evangelism, will stagnate and die. And if it's a young church, it will stagnate and die more quickly than a church that's been going for hundreds of years. When the Titanic went down, I mean, to start with, on the Titanic, amongst other problems, there weren't enough lifeboats for everybody. But not even all the lifeboats that there were got launched that night. Only about 20 lifeboats were launched, and none of them was full. Most of them were at best half full. And there was room on the lifeboats for hundreds more people. But out of the 20 lifeboats that were launched that night, half full, only one went back and was able to save six more. When the other ships finally arrived, they pulled 328 people out of the ocean. Those 328 people didn't need to die that night. And in a way, they died not because the Titanic sank, but because those who were saved wouldn't go back to rescue those who weren't. And you can understand why. To go back would have been dangerous. It would have involved risk. Their boats might have been swamped, pulled under. But because those boats didn't go back, because those who were saved wouldn't go back, over 300 people died. The most dangerous time in a church's life is the time when we are tempted to forget about the people who still need to be saved. When we focus on our own convenience and our own safety. Let me be very clear. While I am at the rudder of MIE, we will always go back. One more thing. In a strange sort of way, we haven't really been tested yet as a church. We haven't really faced much by way of opposition, externally or internally. internally. In a way, there hasn't been huge challenges for us to overcome. There have been difficult conversations, and there have been times when people have felt that maybe Bixley Farm isn't the right church for them to be involved in. But there hasn't been anything that's threatened to split us right down the middle. There hasn't yet been anything that has threatened to derail what we're doing here fundamentally. My question is, how will we respond? Because my guess is, and I'm not a prophet, and I'm not the son of a prophet, but I anticipate, after 20 years of ministry, that at some point in the next few years, there will be something that threatens the very existence of this church. And I guess my question is, how will we respond? And it's easy to sit here and think we know the answer to that question. But as the mighty prophet Mike Tyson once said, he doesn't get quoted enough in churches. Mike Tyson once said, everyone has a plan until they're punched in the face. And it's true. It's the military wisdom, no plan survives contact with the enemy. We've been looking back over the last couple of years, and there is so much to give thanks for. And we have good, we have hope for the future. We have good grounds for saying, look, based on what we have seen God do in us and through us in the past 2 years, we step into the next years with confidence and excitement and anticipation. But we step into these next years with our eyes open. We're not children. We're not naive. We're not immature. Like I said, I'm not standing here pretending to predict the future, but I do think that the hardest stuff is yet to come. And that the next 3 years will be exciting, but difficult. And so I'd like us to spend some time looking ahead and praying. Praying for particularly the next couple of years, for the challenges that we will face, for the hurdles that we will have to overcome, for the evangelism that we still need to do.